Welcome to Self-Directed. We are your hosts, Cecilia and Jesper Conrad. And now it's time to welcome this week's guest. Okay, welcome. Today we are talking with Juliet, whom I stumbled upon on Instagram, where she makes a lot of nice reels about unschooling. So I think we should jump right into it, Juliet. If you can first tell people where you're from and where you're living, and that would be a good start so people know who you are.
Yes, my name is Juliet Silvera. I live in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in the United States. My husband was born in Brazil, and we have three daughters. And right now, two of my daughters, they're 7 and 4 years old. They attend a free school here in Brooklyn. But I'm one of these unschoolers that will, like, for me, it's very much what my child desires or is craving. So I am not anti-school. I'm not anti-homeschool. I kind of float in this very strange place. I feel like I'm like not radical enough for some people and too radical for most of my teacher friends, because I used to teach as well. And I have a master's in education research. I just love reading about education. I love reading about anything. So that's me.
But how did it start? You as an educator by training, where did you stumble over and figure out, hey, this unschooling, doing things alternatively might be something for me that I want to explore? What happened?
Once I had my first daughter, I started to just like ravenously read parenting books. And at the time, I had a job where I felt very unfulfilled. And reading all of these books, I was like, maybe I want to work with kids again. And so I decided to go into teaching, but I didn't want to do anything to do with tests. No. So even though, like, in my educational career, my English teachers had the biggest impact on me and history teachers, I decided to teach art. I have a background in painting. And then when I got into the New York City, I worked at two charter schools. I was shocked and appalled by what was happening. Just how the discrepancies between like the schools where I attended as like a middle-class white person and the schools where I was teaching, how the students were treated. And what was most alarming to me was all of the parenting books I was reading, like the latest research on what's cognitively healthy for kids, you know, time outside, time to move their bodies, things about intrinsic motivation. None of that matched what we were doing. And then I, you know, the more I started looking for options for my own child, I realized that that wasn't just like these schools for poor kids, quote unquote, but for a lot of the public schools, like recess is 25 minutes long.
No time to play.
Yeah. Kids are being bribed with like, you know, the dojo points and these little like, there's a school nearby that's like bribing the kids with these little desk pets. It's like these little plastic toys where it's like, oh, you can feed your desk pet if you're doing a good job. Stuff like that just really bothered me. And I also found it alarming how many of my colleagues also didn't know any of the science of child development or why I found these things alarming. So that's how I wound up that rabbit hole. I think I started reading about like Montessori first, and then from reading about Montessori, I read about some of these other pedagogies, and I don't remember what brought me to unschooling, but I listened to like the Honey I'm Homeschooling the Kids podcast is a great one. Fair of the Free Child. I started listening to these different podcasts. And then I also met some unschoolers whose kids were like very intelligent and very, normal. Because when I was growing up too, the only people that I knew that homeschooled were like Amish. And, you know, they're, we're just so culturally different that to us, they, you know, were like weirdos. But that wasn't the experience I had with homeschoolers here in New York City. And that's, yeah. And now I'm at this free school where there's like a lot more like-minded parents.
Yeah. But you're on your Instagram, you are vocal about it. And at the same time, you also put your face out in the reels. And have you had any backlashes? And I mean, what about your mom? How did she take the whole, hey, we want to do it differently? I know it's two questions in one, but.
Yeah, I think my mom really, I think I've made a lot of kind of non-traditional parenting choices. I had kids at what for New York City women is like considered very young. Like I had my first daughter at 23. So I had three kids before the age of 30. I did extended breastfeeding. We live in a very small apartment. Like some people will be like, oh my God, how do you, know? 'Cause you live in a van. But my priorities are just very different. And I think, but both my parents see my relationship with my children and they haven't expressed any issues with it. Super openly, which is really great for me. When it comes to being out on Instagram, or I'm actually even more active on TikTok, there's always going to be a lot of haters. What's frustrating is that a lot of the algorithms are driven by engagement. So sometimes if I put any post that even alludes to something politically, usually it's the people who disagree who will be the most engaged. Then getting pushed out to those people and you're like, oh my gosh, this is not reaching the audience I want it to reach. But I've been very pleasantly surprised by, you know, on Instagram stories, you can see people who are looking at your stories, right? Yep. And there are old colleagues of mine from the schools where I worked at. They don't really comment very much. They haven't reached out to me, but they keep looking at my stories. Like, you know, for months, I'm like, oh, this person is watching. So they're at least curious. You know, I think if they hated my content, they probably want to keep looking at it. So yeah, sometimes I hold back a little bit, like, because I don't want to throw people under the bus that I used to work with, you know, calling people out for policies that we did or meetings about this, where I was silently sitting there going like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this.
This is also like a common trap that you fall into when you become an unschooling parent, to talk about all the negative things, elements of schooling and how badly it's done and how poorly it's handled and how it affects the children negatively. And it becomes this negative talk. We talked about that a lot, our first years as unschoolers, that we would very often fall into the trap of talking about all the things we disliked
and we tried to make a
hard policy of just discussing the things we like about the choice we make, not so much discussing the things that we don't like about the choice, the thing we didn't do when we didn't put the kids in school. Fuck. Shut. You have to put a beep there because we have an American audience. Yes. You know, we swear a lot in Europe, or at least in Denmark.
I'll find your number.
The chair just broke just behind my back. No, I can sit like this.
Okay.
So my point is, how do you balance that act of, because I think sometimes when I try to avoid the criticizing of the schooling, I'm being a little bit false. It's like a fake version because I deep down I believe a lot of negative things about schooling, and then I don't say it because I don't know, people tend to get very frustrated when I do.
I maybe instead of only talking about what I like about my choices, I talk sometimes about some of the benefits of school itself, not necessarily my choice, but that's also a fine line to walk, is I'm very much an advocate for school change. I know that unschooling isn't going to be an option for a lot of families. So I'm very much making a lot of my content to push change, to help more parents like wake up to the fact that what we know with child development science is not what's being implemented, especially in America, with the policies in school. So yeah, I don't shy away from necessarily saying negative things, but I do talk a lot about what I think we could do to change things, and try to rally more parents, because in America, at least, the loudest kind of parents at the school board meetings are the ones that are like, you know, trying to change history textbooks and not about evolution. And, you know, they're very active at school board meetings, whereas parents who are more like me, who might just be like frustrated that there's not enough recess, aren't the necessarily ones showing up to school board meetings.
But we're based in Europe, and maybe at least a good chunk of our followers are. So would you, I don't know how the American school system currently is like, to be honest, I just imagine something like what I know from Europe, like an average of European schools, which are very different. Could you somehow sum up how it's, how's it going over there? What's the status?
So for instance, when it comes to play-based learning, I think countries like Denmark, like Germany, Finland are pretty far ahead of us. We know that children learn best through play, but in the United States, testing with the No Child Left Behind, these different policies where they were trying to improve the education system, they did that by like pushing these standards and these tests. And then they tried to incentivize better test scores by creating things like charter schools. Charter schools don't have to follow the same exact laws as a regular public school. They have some flexibility, but they only, depending on the state, they only get to remain open if their test scores are improving or that they're scoring higher than the regular public school. The idea was that this would help.
How is it different again? Would you explain that? So I'm sorry, but I need to understand it. How is it different if they still have to do the testing? What's different?
That's a brilliant question, because is it really different?
I'm just trying to understand it.
So for instance, the charters here in New York City, you are allowed to hire a certain number of teachers that don't have a teaching license. You can make your own school schedule. So, and this is how they start to game the test scores a bit. So for instance, the charters where I worked, normally in the regular school system, the spring break happens in like March or April, something is like right before when the students take the standardized math tests for the state. But at the charters where I worked, their break was like a month later, so that they get that extra week of test prep time right before the math standardized test. Or they can have the school day be slightly longer or shorter. Or what else can they do? Like, you know, if the district picked out a certain curriculum, charter schools get to do their own thing, right? But they get to do their own curriculum.
Just clarifying, they get to do their own curriculum, but they need to do the same test.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
So, yeah.
No. Ironic. Yeah.
Earlier, sorry. I was talking about Montessori, you know, because they're charter, there are charter schools that can do Montessori. Well, Montessori doesn't do standardized testing. So the places here that offer Montessori only offer it up until the end of like second grade, because starting in third grade, they would have to do the tests.
Okay.
So, and what's happened is in an effort to prepare for the test, academic work, like worksheet work, has just gotten pushed younger and younger and younger, to the point where you have like neighbors of mine who's like 3-year-old goes to a daycare where they do worksheets, and the parents think that that's a good thing, that the kids are learning that way. Whereas we know that it's not a good thing. And in my experience, what I saw in schools is that kids are loathing things like reading and math at a younger and younger age. Like they're disinterested in it because it's been pushed on them so young. So that by the time they even get to the test prep years, they are already super anxious about school. They really, it just drives them to hate being there. And, you know, you see it all across the country. Our youth mental health is deteriorating really, really fast. And that's why I'm like, okay, I know you guys obviously didn't love everything about the European school system. But I look over there with some degree of envy. Those are kind of the changes that I would like to see here, is more play-based.
Make sure you look to the north.
Say again.
Just make sure you look to the north of Europe then.
The South European is very strict.
You're right about the Scandinavian and this, the schooling in Finland being better. But
I have friends here in New York City. I have friends from all over. I have a friend from France, for example, who was like fast tracked to kind of like the lower, you know, oh, you're going to be like a seamstress or something in France from a very young age, like told that they were really bad at math. All of those things.
Why not destroying the child right from the start? Yeah.
United States, and started doing coursework here, and his college professors were like, oh my gosh, you're really good at math, like you might want to consider this, this, and this. And now he's like a, I want to say he's like a radiologist or something. He works in a medical office. And it's just crazy how like you take these kids who are like, you know, they're rambunctious little kids, and at that early of an age, be like, you're smart, you're not smart, you go this way, you go that way, from like when they're 5. It's just bonkers.
So, but how would you see it, the change? I mean, so personally, I mean, we're on the same path in life somehow. I'm unschooling. We're unschooling 3 children. We have 4, but one is an adult. It's hard to unschool someone who's 24. 23. But I've kind of given up on the whole idea of schooling. So I have a problem with the idea of a curriculum as such. The idea of someone else deciding for the children what they are supposed to learn. I have a problem with the batch teaching, the batch living. I have the problem with putting all the kids together based on their age. I have a problem with everything compulsory. Like I like the idea of the freedom of the children, that any education, any learning, any activity basically should be voluntary, especially when you're a child. When you're an adult, maybe you have some obligations, but when you're like 9, you don't, basically. So I'm just curious as to how would you see the American school system change and evolve into something that, you know, you wouldn't dislike that much, or that you would maybe even like?
Yeah, this is where me and a lot of the unschoolers kind of diverge a little bit, because like when I was working in the charters and I wanted to switch to a school that was more progressive, it really bothered me that in order to do that, I would have to not serve the same public school student body that I wanted to serve and only serve like rich kids. And in the community, I feel like there's a lot of people who are like, the system, we can't change it. It's inherently flawed. So I just got to do me. And like, yeah, worry about your family, but there are millions of kids in this system who are going to be there, whether you choose to unschool or not. And, you know, do I owe anything to them? Not necessarily, but I do desperately want to help them. So while I don't think that we can, you know, in some people's mind, it's putting lipstick on a pig. I say put the lipstick on the pig because, you know, any improvement is a big improvement for the mental health of those students. If I were to make my like dream school schedule for the U.S. public school system, it would include like a tiny bit of structured mathematics and literacy in the morning. And then the kids would play all afternoon and you would have teachers who understand like the value of play and are trained more as like facilitators, like, you know, for school teachers who can like not do top down, like, this is how we play, but like understand how to observe children and like see, oh, this student is really into like whittling things, or this student is really into this. Like, I'm going to put fuel on that fire. I'm going to give them access to this or that activity or person or material. We don't do any of that right now. Like, there's like very, teachers don't know their students most of the time. The time of day where you would get to know them really is like when they're doing open-ended things, because that's when you see what they're interested in. And most of the like teachers in my school, it's like, oh, we dropped the kids off for recess and now it's time for the adults to have a conversation, as opposed to like, oh, wow, like this student loves rubbing chalk all over the ground. So yeah, I would have way more unstructured play for elementary school students. And then I think
what is an elementary school student? How old are they? We use the term.
5 to 9, 10.
Okay.
And then for the older students, I think something closer to my kids' democratic school, where they get to vote on the kinds of classes or activities that they're going to have, where you still have people that are, you know, they know more about a certain content area like science or art, but the students are like, oh, I really want to learn digital art, you know, then you fill that need, that desire, instead of saying like, okay, kids, these are the subjects that you have to learn. Yeah, just giving kids much more of a say with a large, you know, with a massive education system, you can't necessarily offer the full autonomy that unschoolers have. There's too many students.
So on a practical level, if I had to look after 25 children instead of 3, I would have to add some structure that I don't have to do now that it's only 3. I can manage that.
Right.
We had our oldest child in a free school in Copenhagen doing kind of what you describe. We have these free schools in Denmark where you pay, but the state pays something like 70-80%. So the parents pay, but it's not that bad.
Right.
So we could afford that, at least with one child. she's markedly older than the others. And there the kids got to make their own plan. They made a plan on the Mondays in the morning, and they were together of all ages. So they would be 30 children in one class, but they would be of all ages from 13. And they would help each other out more than they would get help from adults. There would be two teachers and 30 children. They would make their own plan on Mondays. They would have a very long pause for eating and cleaning up and organizing and playing in the middle of the day. And the afternoons, they did more like workshops and creative stuff, music, painting, learning skills with their hands. And after something like 3 o'clock, it was free play until the parents picked them up. So that was like, and then they had like 2 months a year, they would just be in the kitchen because they would cook for each other. It was a school of 200 children. So maybe two months is too much. I can't remember, but they had a lot of kitchen time, which was actually a very good thing to learn the skill. They would work with professional chefs. There were two chefs. And they did professional cooking of organic food. And it was just a dream of a school. It was. We had that.
And it's, if you want to look it up, it's based on a French reformist called Célestine Freinet. They're called the Freinet schools. I will send you, put it in the show notes.
We have two of them in Copenhagen. Yeah. They're beautiful schools. But what would it take, do you think, to get from where the American schools are now and,
because
for
we are,
that matter, the Danish public
we
school
are
system?
We have given up on the system.
No, it's just, it's not. Well, we have different paths in life, and I respect yours, and I think it's beautiful. It's just, I feel my footprint will be, you know, I will shine my torch in another direction. It doesn't. I don't mean to say that my direction is more right than yours. I'm not going to reform the school system because I don't believe in it. And I don't believe, I kind of feel it's so flawed that maybe we should just shut it down and start over with something we call something. But it doesn't matter that's my take. I'm not going to fight it. I worked within the system as well many, many, many years ago. And I think, it's a far cry from the perfect school we had in Copenhagen for our oldest daughter to the public schools, even the Scandinavian public schools, which are, you know, known for being very good schools. They are still schools. They still make all the same mistakes. We have now the standardized tests, just like in the United States. The only thing is they are voluntary, except everybody forgets to tell the parents and the kids that they are voluntary. So they believe they have to do it. How do we get from here to there?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Cecilia. We're interrupting our own podcast just to make sure that you know that I am available if you want to talk to someone who has lived the unschooling life, who has traveled the world, who has beat cancer, who has been the mother of 4 amazing children. Luckily, I still am the mother of 4 amazing children. I know about life when it's hard. I know about life when it's complicated. I know what you need is probably most of all someone who will understand the special world that you are in as an unschooling parent. Even with your trauma and your personal history getting in the way, what I do really is to be a loving support, a rock. And I do it on the base that I am a trained psychologist. I have worked with a lot of people with a lot of different situations. I am so ready to be your support, the one that you need to get some confidence and be strong in your journey as an unschooling parent. So don't hold back. I give a 20-minute conversation for free. You can talk to me on the phone or in a video call. And just see if it's a match. If you want to connect, you can find me on social media or find me on my website, ceciliaconrad.com. If you're a Danish speaker, I have a Danish website, ceciliaconrad.dk, and we can find those 20 minutes and see how it goes from there. And now back to the podcast.
I think this is how we do it. That's why I have my platform, is to educate more people, because parents and teachers can't get outraged about what they don't know about. So the fact that so many of our public school teachers don't know that as much about childhood development as I believe they should is a huge issue. Parents as well. I love to educate parents because the thing is, you could make a lot of the changes that I'm talking about tomorrow, and a lot of parents would be outraged. They would be like, why isn't my child being drilled, you know, their times tables at 5 years old? That's what I want, because I want them to go to Princeton and, you know, have the social mobility of somebody who's super smart, right? So we need a lot of parent education. And then one of the unique things to the United States that I don't think is the same in Europe is that our standardized tests are private companies facilitate the standardized testing. So we're really like funneling billions of dollars to private companies to do these tests. And those same private companies make the curriculum for the tests, and they do the student teaching, like they write the student teaching textbooks, and they do the tests to become a teacher, to prepare the students for the test. So, and they pay.
So it's a pyramid scheme, basically.
Yes. And they also lobby Congress. They lobby our legislators, again, millions of dollars a year to keep things exactly as they are. So the more we can educate parents about what is happening, to me, the amount of money being spent on these tests, if more people knew about it, it would be a bipartisan issue. Like both Democrats and Republicans would be like, oh, our schools are spending millions of dollars for these private companies, some of them not even based in the United States. Like Pearson is a British publishing company, and we're using our public school dollars to pay this publishing company to facilitate these tests. How hard can it be to make like an in-state test? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, why need a private company for that? Nobody needs that. And the more I think we keep sounding the alarm bells around student mental health as well. Parents, every parent hates seeing their child suffer. And right now there's so many children that are suffering, and people want to figure it out. And I think the lack of autonomy and this kind of like, okay, you know, my parents don't look very happy right now. They're burnt out. They're stressed out. You're telling me that if I just study hard and do all of these steps, I can be just like them?
Yeah, what a joy. Yeah.
Who wants to do that? Right. So the more we acknowledge, okay, this, the lack of autonomy, the lack of time outdoors, you know, the, just like you said, the lack of freedom is crushing lots of people. And we are putting our focus, you know, a lot of times we're just funneling more money into things that aren't actually helping us improve. And what's heartbreaking, I think what you said about this school in Copenhagen, where the government still pays a large chunk of money, a lot of the self-directed education, like groups or facilities here, are really struggling to stay funded. They're yeah. really floundering economically. And I believe that if you could get like a couple progressive mayors in certain cities in the United States to take a chance on something like a democratic school and actually fund it with public school dollars.
Is that legal on a city level? Could a mayor do that within the laws that are now in place?
Yeah, you would have to get support from school boards. There, you know, it's like COVID, right? Like if you really wanted to make certain things happen, you could, right? Like when COVID hit, all of a sudden we redirected all the cities like school lunch cafeterias to make free meals for people across the city. Like there's red tape, but I believe if you could get somebody who is really trying to like make a name for themselves politically to do something like this, it's a little bit scary. But if the proof of concept is like if you were to look at some of the teens at our free school, a lot of them are kids who suffered immensely in the public school system and left. They're kids that have eating disorders, kids who had like a caregiver die midway through the school year. And then their teachers are like, oh, you're about to fail out of school. And it's like, holy fuck. Like, am I not allowed to be a person while I'm in this system? Like, I'm going to be penalized for this horrible thing that happened to me. I think if you could demonstrate that this is an actual sustainable way to do school and that these kids do still turn out fine, then it would put into question like, okay, so why are we spending so much money on these other things instead of on the teachers, instead of on actually serving the students? Why am I, especially because all of these curriculums, it's like the same stuff in a different format, you know, like every year after year, they're like, buy this new textbook. It's like, how much has the textbook changed in a year? I don't understand.
Mm. Juliet, one of the things I hear you talking about is as a parent, you should have more knowledge. As a teacher, you should educate yourself better on the what is actually we know works from the research. And it made me to think about my travel as a parent, because I was, you know, in the public school system, and Cecilia explained, hey, we could put our daughter in this alternative school. And for me, it was just like, why that? There's nothing wrong with the public school. Very classical, dad-like behavior. And I remember the shift when our oldest daughter, now grown up, she sometimes came and asked for stuff I didn't knew. And my normal response was, go ask your teacher. Whereas with my homeschooled, unschooled children, when they ask me stuff, I'm like, okay, shit, I need to go figure that out together with you. Yeah. Because now it's my responsibility. And I have since taking this choice in life, I've been thinking a lot about personal responsibility as a parent. There is something that is very easy about sending your kid to a school as a parent, because if the child flaunts, I can't remember the correct name, but if they fail in one of the subjects, it is not you as a parent who are to blame. It is the school. It is someone else. So there is something about this not taking responsibility that I think it could be wonderful if we could help change somehow. Because I think that's one of the problems. It is super easy.
But I think there is a catch there, that if we start talking to the parents about taking home the responsibility, you own the responsibility of your children and therefore of their education, you might get the parents who get very ambitious about their children learning the same thing as the school system would teach them, just better. Where you never get out of this idea that we as the parents or the adults or the government can make a plan for the children, and then they will be safe. If they score high on all these things, then they will have a good life and then we're all happy. I think facing the fear that it's kind of scary to be a parent. It's kind of scary to have responsibility of other people. You never really know. And I think we made up this fake system that if you do well in math, then you'll do well in life. And it's very obvious if you look at it from the helicopter perspective that is not true. As you say, maybe, okay, you do well in math, but you have an eating disorder and you feel like shit in life. This is flawed somehow, that we're trying to make ourselves feel good and feel safe. I've done my part by either sending them to school or taking them home, but giving them a curriculum, making sure they learn these things without questioning, are these the things that will actually make them into young adults ready for life? I think that question is never being asked. And the thing I never shared didn't share before in this conversation about the perfect school we had in Copenhagen is that this school was under attack from the parents. It was not the government. It was not our laws because we have the free schooling in our constitution. It was the parents. Exactly what you said before, like, why is Adam not reading yet? Now he is 8. And the parents start panicking and they want the textbooks and the worksheets and the results. And these amazing teachers said, leave him be. He will read before he's 15. But they couldn't, you know, they would lose all their customers if they didn't somehow comply. And it was a very, very, very hard thing to keep this school on track. So when I ask you, what do you think we need to do or what would it take? I am worried about, can we educate all the parents out of their own fear?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, just a short interruption as I have a small message about some of the things I'm working on. My name is Jesper Conrad. It is my pleasure to invite you to become a less stressed dad. I know how it is to be stressed out. My wife, I had cancer. I have 4 kids and I had a long career and had to like juggle everything at the same time. And it's hard. It's sometimes hard to be a dad. It's hard to be the breadwinner, if that's what you are. That's what I've been in our family, where my wife have been at home with our children. And it takes its toll. And one of the things that really help is to talk with someone else about it. And that is why I've created the Better Dad Institute, together with my good friend Martin Cook. And at the Better Dad Institute, we have dad circles where we meet up once a week and just talk about life as a dad, because sharing actually is super, super healing in the process of being a dad. To just hear that someone else is working through the same problems that you are is very, very giving. And if you're into more like a one-on-one thing, then I would happily help you and share my experience of being a dad to 4 wonderful children and having a wonderful relationship with my wife and being a full-time travel dad, how I have juggling everything at the same time, having a career, and how I have learned to get those shoulders down to actually be very happy in my life. Of course, the stress can like pop up, but then I have the techniques I've learned and which I would love to teach you. So reach out at the betterdadinstitute.com. And if you want to get directly in contact with me, then it's betterdadinstitute.com/Conrad. I look forward to hearing from you and have fun. And now on with the podcast.
I think it's also really interesting. One of the questions I posed on one of my TikToks was like, who is responsible for trying to educate parents? Because right now it's like we educate postpartum women, you know, call the hospital if you're bleeding too much. And beyond that, it's nothing. Like, not even like, oh, make sure your baby like moves. Like, the amount of instructions or lack thereof that I was given by my pediatrician on very basic things is like alarming to me. But I do think, like I said, I don't think we're going to go like full free school model from kindergarten onward. I do think there will have to be some structured academics. But in terms of things like supporting children's social emotional intelligence, I think we can do a tremendously better job than we're doing if we become more comfortable having difficult conversations with parents and making education about basic child development more common knowledge. And we're already doing that on social media. The number of like gentle parents on TikTok, conscious parent, is exploding. People are starting to, the neuroscience is starting to be more common knowledge. This idea that spanking kids is damaging, that when your kids
spanking kids is illegal
in Denmark.
Not where I come from.
Not in the States, yeah.
Not in the States. Yeah. It's it's legal in schools in the United States.
Can you come into the next century?
But it's so fun. Sometimes, you know.
No,
but Denmark, we are like, sometimes we are looking to the States for all our fashion and different stuff. And it's like, they are the forerunners. But on some things, on Hollywood movies and stuff.
I'm shocked. I didn't know that.
No, I knew. No.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
and it actually made me. I've been thinking about this because I looked it up. When was it stopped being legal in Denmark and in France? And I looked into some of the different numbers, and it just made me think that if you are raised with spanking, and with spanking, it's of course more correction. I still believe it's wrong, but I don't feel that the people go around and beat their children up, you know. But if you are raised with solving a problem is done by force, that gives a wild adult. What happens in the mind of an adult? How it's like that is it cannot be good. I cannot see it being good in any way. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a sidetrack. Sorry.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm also an anarchist, so I don't really believe in democracy and policy because I don't know, I don't see the results that I would like to see. But if I should believe in it a little bit, maybe we should start there. I mean, how can violence be legal in a modern state like the United States, being so proud of themselves over there, being like, we're like, I don't know, the best in the world with everything, bigger, better, faster, more. And could you please stop spanking each other? I mean, it's just, to me, it's like the Stone Age. I can't believe it. Is it legal to spank your wife? No. So why is it legal to spank your relative only, under the age of 18?
In Denmark, it only was like 20 years ago they stopped it.
Yeah, but it was legal, but nobody did it. They just forgot to change the law.
Well, here in the United States, remember I made the comment about the school board meetings and who's showing up for those? A lot of the people showing up for those are people that spank their kids. It's like, you know, religious extremists there's a lot of science denial in the United States. And even when it comes down to that, like, I don't know how many studies you need to prove that this is harmful, but there's a bajillion of them. Just like we have, like, the thing about what people, I think, don't understand when it comes to punishments or incentives is that it might work in the short term, right? So like when you bribe children into compliance, it does look like it is working, right? Because you're like, oh my God, promise them a sticker if they sit down and now they're sitting down. When it falls apart is when you now expect them to sit down and you don't have any stickers. Or you spanked your child, so now they know to fear you, but you send them to my art room and they're not listening. And this has literally happened to me before as a teacher. And I'm like, you got to listen to me. This is what we're doing. And they're like, what are you going to do to me? You can't hit me. They literally said that to me. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, like this is a child who will only respect an adult or respect an authority when they are threatened. And otherwise, they're like, fuck you, lady. I don't have to listen to you. They don't understand why you would want to comply. Like, what's in it for me, right? So that's, I think people lose sight of what we want long-term for children. Like you said, like, what is the real goal? Is the real goal to go to Princeton and make $1 million? Or is the real goal to arrive to adulthood with like a strong identity, with strong mental health, with like good interpersonal skills, with an idea of what you want to do to contribute to the world, as opposed to like, this was the pre-scripted way that I thought you could contribute to the world. And this is what you have to do, but I feel dead inside. What do we really want for young people growing up in our communities? And it's hard. Like, I I sometimes avoid putting things in my profile that would turn off people that spank their kids or do this, because I kind of want to like see how far they can get into my content before they're like, oh, I'm not supposed to like you. You believe in like liberation and stuff. Like, cause some like video I just posted is getting traction again, where I'm talking about my kid, like talking back, quote unquote, to me. And somebody was like, somebody left a comment like, well, are they ever going to live in the real world? And I asked them back.
That's the real world. Yeah.
Right. And I asked them back. I was like, oh, do you think my child needed to obediently, you know, respond to my yelling at them without question in order to be prepared for the real world? And they said, that's not what I said. And so I asked, so what do you mean? Like, what do you think your comment meant? Right. And they never responded, but it kind of, I think it gets the gears turning a little bit sometimes if you can ease people to it, get people talking, be more curious, as opposed to, it's really hard online. People can be really hateful. But I do think that the tides are turning. Yeah.
Let's hope so.
I'm sorry.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
We have to.
Like slavery, right? Or Jim Crow. Like how enormous those systems were and how ingrained they were in our society, economic, like at every level of society. And there were still people who, in the face of that, were like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to be enslaved. Or I don't, you know, Rosa Parks, like, I'm not going to sit at the back of the bus. That takes such enormous balls and or vulvas. And if we just need more of that. I think people are too complacent. They're not as outraged as they should be about what our status quo is. And the more outrage we can grow, the better chance we have of actually making changes in the system.
The sun is setting here, and I think that's a perfect place to end our conversation.
Not the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little short, but
no.
Sunset right now, and beautiful place to end it. Let's be a little outraged. Be a little angry.
Let's be more outraged. And thank you. And Juliet, wonderful to talk to you, even though we are on the much more radical side. There is definitely a need for people like you and for the people who want to reach out to you and connect with you. Can you please list where they best can do that before we end the call?
Yes. So my name is Juliet, J-U-L-I-E-T. I believe it's like the English spelling instead of the French spelling. So my handle on Instagram is Juliet Learns. It's the same as on TikTok, Juliet Learns. I do parent coaching. I do talks in schools. You can also email julietlearns@gmail.com to contact me. And yeah, I'm all for stoking more outrage and educating parents in a way that, you know, is trauma-informed and conscientious and not trying to put people down. I really want to support our expansion of our knowledge and change things and learn. Fantastic.
Good plan.
It was wonderful connecting with you, and thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you liked it, then please share it with all your friends and family. We would also love it if you gave our podcast a review. Thanks. And if you want to support our podcast and work, then you can find us on patreon.com/theconradfamily. We will continue to travel full time, and if you want to tag along, then please follow us on Facebook and Instagram @theconradfamily. And you can also read more than 100 blog posts on our website, theconrad.family. Until next time, make a wonderful day. Thank you.